There's something wrong with the world today. The light bulb's getting dim. There's meltdown in the sky. If you can judge a wise man by the color of his skin, then mister, you're a better man than I. Welcome, one and all, to Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always by Scott Haskin. How you doing, Scott?
Corey, I'm doing great, my friend. First, before we get into anything Aerosmith, I want to say congratulations on 100 episodes of And the Podcast Will Rock.
That's right. We recorded our 100th episode this week. We kind of handed the reins over to our good friend Kevin Brown, and we really didn't quite know what he had in store. He had us do a little homework. We had to do a top 10 songs, our top 10 Van Halen songs that we've covered on the show already, the first 99 tracks, and a couple other questions that we did. And it was a heck of a lot of fun. I thought we'd be a 20-30 minute show, turned into a 3-hour show. So that's going to be split into two parts that you can find wherever you get your podcast from. But that's why Scott and I are recording very late this week, actually. That's a Thursday night as we sit down here.
That's right. And we usually record on Monday. But I think you could pretty much count on any show that's not just a normal you and Mark spinning a song to go about 3 hours. That seems to be about the average for
that seems to be the norm. Yeah, you are 100% right.
I'm very excited for you guys. It's really weird to see how big the wheel looks now because you guys don't have that many songs left. You've covered a good majority of their catalog.
27. We're at 27 songs left. So we got a few more left on this one, Scott. So you're not getting rid of me that easy. We got a ways to go when it comes to Aerosmith. I haven't even done like the final tally. It's got to be around 200 tracks that we're talking about for Aerosmith here. And we're on show 83. So, a little ways to go.
We got, I would say, probably 3 years, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Give or take, yeah.
It's going to be a fun 3 years. I'm looking forward to it. Last week, if you remember, we covered Never Loved a Girl from Honkin' on Bobo. Pretty good track. Did you go back and listen to the original?
I did. And you know what? I enjoyed her version of it. But let me ask you a question, Corey, because I really go back and forth with this. Do you tend to like the first version you've heard of a song more than another version, whether it's the original or not?
That's interesting. I don't know if I've ever stopped to think about it that way, but I think you're probably right that I maybe like the first version I heard a little bit more than the original.
I liked Aretha's. It was good, but it didn't have that. There was a spark, I think, that Aerosmith had in this one that I didn't quite feel from her. Nothing wrong with her version whatsoever, but I think they just put a little extra sass in it.
Well, and you said a line in that show last week that I think that really hit home for me. That really summed up that song when you said Steven Tyler is singing it like he lived it.
Yeah.
Like not even wrote it, like he lived it. And I thought, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right. A great, great cover. Nevertheless, it's not on the mixtape.
Right. Well, yeah, but I mean, it's up against such stiff competition that, you know, it's as we always say, it's an uphill battle, even though we've been changing out songs like, you know, like dinner napkins lately.
Oh, I know when we put Love Me Two Times on Kevin Brown for one, got very upset. Does not like the Doors, turns out. Oof.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is that going to be your next pick for Ultimate 100%. Catalog Clash?
Well, and we were talking and he said, well, each of us should get like one veto. So he might. But I know there's a few bands that he really, really hates that I really like. I'm not a huge Doors fan, so I would throw it out there just to piss him off. But I really like Def Leppard, and he hates them. Right. I would put them out there. And he's not a Metallica fan, and I am. Wow. So I don't know which band he's going to use his veto on.
It's interesting with bands like The Doors. I greatly appreciate their musical significance. I'm grateful for what they did. How they influenced music. I think they're a very important band in our history, but that doesn't mean I particularly enjoy. It's like opera. I can have great appreciation for the work that operas go through to become what they are, but that doesn't necessarily mean I want to sit down and listen to one.
Oh, I totally agree. And I feel the same way about the band Rush, and I'm going to be on a Rush podcast next week. I think it is. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going on that show, too. Again, another band that I don't know that much about, but, you know, I'm always happy to dig in. In fact, I had sent Chaz a note and said, you know, just something to think about, because Rush has a certain following, but they don't have a lot of commercial hits, at least not as far as I know. So you're really Tom Sawyer and Limelight are probably the most known. And I said, you might want to take those songs off of your wheel and maybe consider doing those for like big episodes, like an anniversary or something special. And that started a whole debate on the show as to what else they should withhold from the wheel and do special episodes on. And I think that's going to carry over to next week's episode. So it's kind of fun.
Oh, great. That's the one I'm on. Thanks, Scott. If you're giving me more work to do, you've already caused me to do an edit on this show. Like already we're recording here. Been rolling tape for 10 minutes. We've been on for two because you kept fucking me up.
Well, if I'm not, I just want to show you your value. I don't want you to feel like the Doors.
I appreciate it. It's not as if I have like a giant, you know, 100th episode of a podcast I have to edit for tomorrow morning or a live show that's going to go 3 hours, like you said, ready to go for Friday night. That's tomorrow night with a massive panel of 10 people. I have nothing going on. Thank you. I appreciate that.
But this doesn't come out until Tuesday. So you've got time to have some whiskey and recover and, you know, get a couple hours of sleep.
It actually doesn't come out till Wednesday. You don't even know what day the show drops,
right,
Scott.
Wednesday, yeah. No.
Do I even know you anymore?
I'm Scott. Hey, what's on the dice, Corey?
Hey, we got some songs on the dice. Why don't I bring those in and we can talk about them? Currently, we have Think About It from Night in the Ruts, Living on the Edge from Get a Grip. We All Fall Down from Music from Another Dimension, Back in the Saddle from Rocks, Love in an Elevator from Pump, and Something from Music from Another Dimension. Scott Haskin, out of those six, what are you in the mood to hear tonight?
You know, last week, I think it was, you voted for Love in an Elevator, and it's got such a great swing feel to it. I would love to hear that song tonight.
That's a great one. I was thinking that one too, but you picked it. So I'm going to pick something else. I'm going to go with one of your choices, actually, Back in the Saddle. I want to hear a big song tonight. We haven't covered a hit in a long time, and I'm just looking back. When was the last time we did, you know, Nine Lives was a single. That was 10 episodes ago. That was show 72, but it's not a big song. Jaded was the biggest single off of Just Push Play. That was show 64.
Yeah.
It has been a while.
You See Me Crying before that. Because Hearts Done Time wasn't released. I don't think was Samurai wasn't a single, was it?
Nope.
Yeah. So you're right. It has been weeks.
Then tonight's got to be the night. What do you say? We'll get Steven Tyler all warmed up and we'll throw it over to him. And we are going to come up with Living on the Edge. This is a Scott Haskin pick you put on the dice a couple weeks ago. And it's the song that the lyric I took from at the beginning of the show.
Well, that's just kismet.
I think it is. And I had to play a little bit of that track for the audio test here tonight. And Scott's like, oh, that's a really nice guitar tone. I'm like, well, we might be talking more about it because you put it on the dice and now we have rolled it. What do you know about Living on the Edge?
I live it. Being a podcaster, it's life.
You live in Las Vegas. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been maced. I've been stabbed. I've been set on fire. So I kind of feel like I have a little bit lived on the edge. I don't know.
And that's just this last month.
Right, since my last episode came out. This is a song, of course, I know nothing about. So I'm excited. I love that the intro. I think the guitar sounded great. And I'm sure I'll love the bass.
I tell you what, Living on the Edge was the first single from Get a Grip, released February 23rd, 1993. The B-sides were Don't Stop and Can't Stop Missing. It was written by Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, and Mark Hudson. According to the band's biography, it was inspired by the 1992 Los Angeles riots. Okay. He also mentions that this song features the sound of a bass drum he stole from his high school. Four loud beats are heard from that drum in a pause between the final verse and the chorus. And you'll know that moment when we get to it. I'll pause for you, though. But you hear four loud, distinct beats. Apparently, that's from a bass drum he stole from a high school, or from his high school specifically.
I could almost see stealing a marching snare. Those are a little bit deeper than regular snares, but that would be kind of hard to sneak out. A bass drum, you're kind of saying, hey, catch me.
Yeah. I can just see him strapping it on the front and running out of the school with an old security guard chasing him. Yeah. That's what living on the edge is all about. There you go.
But can you picture him running, but having it strapped to his chest, going boom, 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 while he's
absolutely
trying to get out the door.
Yeah. Steven Tyler and Scott Haskin, I tell you, they live on the edge.
We do. Do we have any update on how he's recovering?
Well, I got to tell you, I heard a rumor. This is not substantiated in any way, but you know, if you follow a fellow by the name of Aero Fanatic, he is really kind of plugged in to Aerosmith, and he had heard that the rest of the 23 tour is going to be postponed to 24 to really give Steven a chance to heal his vocal cords and come back at full strength. Wow. That's not substantiated. That's not you know, confirmed by anybody. According to him and his sources, the rerouting is kind of going on as we speak. But it sounds like, you know, Steven's not a spring chicken, and I think we all get that. And I guess he really did a number on his vocal cords, and just tore them all to hell. So if he needs the rest of the year to heal, I say rest up. And we want to see you out there again. You know, this is the last go around for the band. I really want them to add some more dates so I can go see him one more time. But if he needs the rest of 2023, I say take it.
Well, it's just smart business. I mean, if he's that bad off right now, then what's going to happen is he's going to go and do a show or two, and either he's not going to perform up to 100% because he doesn't want to push himself, which I can't see him doing, or he's going to push himself again too far and end up back in the hospital. So better to take a little more time to heal and do it right than it is to just, okay, we got dates, so we got to get back out there. Let's just hope you're okay and we can get through the tour. It sucks for the people that have tickets, that have scheduled everything, but in the end, you're more likely to see a show than you are if they just push things.
That's right. So all the best to Steven Tyler. Please rest up. And if we got to wait to 2024 to get you back on the road, so be it. I know I read an interview with the replacement drummer, and he was talking about how Joey Kramer got injured right before the 2019 Vegas residency. And then shortly after that, his wife tragically and unexpectedly passed away. So that's why he's not currently on the tour. But the drummer then went on to say, you know, I really kind of hope this is one of those farewell tours that goes on for like 4 or 5 years, because I just got here. I've only played like, you know, 4 or 5 shows with Aerosmith. I want to keep going. I know they're tired and they're old and stuff, but I'm ready to go for the next decade if they want to. One of those never ending farewell tours like the Eagles went on. That's still going on, I think.
And speaking of never-ending farewell tours, I just read that Ozzy is going to go back in the studio and do another album, and his 60th farewell tour, I think.
Yep. Yeah, he said he wants to do at least one more tour. Like, he's ready to hit the road again. So
yeah.
he can barely stand, but sure, why not?
If he can get through the show and perform at a level that he feels is up to standard, I think that's great. I think about, you know, whether he can stand or not being so much of an issue as far as the potential performance, but it does make a difference as a vocalist, because your diaphragm is not aligned the same way as it is if you're standing, and that can make a difference. I think if he can go out with quality and do some shows, I'm 100% for it. If he's doing something that is below par, then I would say it's not a good idea.
You know, we were talking about that before we got on the call tonight, Scott, about Phil Collins, because he did a solo tour where he had to sit in a chair. He obviously can't play drums anymore. He's had a ton of health issues. And then he just did the final Genesis tour where he sat in a chair and his son Nick took over on drums. But he's sitting down the whole time and he's singing. And would you want to go see a band like Genesis if Phil Collins is just sitting in a chair? Like, he's still Phil Collins. He's still cracking jokes. He still sounded pretty good, like for an old guy with a ton of health issues. But, you know, it's just not quite the same. Is that the kind of performance you would shell out a couple hundred bucks to watch?
Yeah, that's such a tough question, because especially with a band like Genesis, because they're such an epic band. I've never seen them live. So it would be hard to say I wouldn't want to go see them. But would I want my memory to be... I this would be a rare case where I would probably read some reviews and see what people are saying. And if they thought, you know what, despite the fact that he's not physically 100%, it was still an amazing show, I would probably say it's worth giving it a shot. But if the reviews are, you know, it's just not Genesis, it's not up to snuff. I know the guys in Deep Purple have said, as they're on their long goodbye tour for the last few years, they've kind of said, you know, if any of us are getting to the point where we're not performing to par, then we're just going to stop. That's going to be what will stop us. And I have to respect that, because it's not fair to charge people and not give them their money's worth.
Right.
And I could get behind that. But I have to kind of say, for the band, I think they have their own integrity. I think if they couldn't perform up to a reasonable par, I don't think they'd do it.
Nope. Hopefully that's the case. But what do you say? We've talked enough about depressing stuff about, you know, our old rock heroes who just can't quite go out and do what we want them to do anymore, thanks to the ravages of time. But yes, tell you what, back in 1993, Aerosmith was arguably the biggest band in the world. This was a monster album for him. This is the first single, hit number 18 on the Billboard Hot 100. This is Living on the Edge.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. And God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise.
All right, before we get into the big chorus, I'll pause it here for you, Scott. What do you got?
I was actually just getting ready to ask you to stop. This is really interesting. It has almost a Celtic feel to it, with that bass drum being the way it is. I think it's just missing, you know, some sort of like a ethnic flute or bagpipe to really seal in that sound. But it definitely has a very unique feel for Aerosmith. I love the layering of it. I like the vocal harmonies. I like the change in pitch when the harmony comes in. This is off to an incredible start.
Oh, wait till you get to the chorus. This song won Aerosmith a Grammy Award for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal. Mm. And speaking of vocal, you're about to hear why. How about that chorus?
That is a kick-ass chorus. I love the change in tone. I don't normally like when a drummer rides a crash cymbal like that, but they've got it pushed back far enough in the mix where it doesn't really intrude on things. You know, I did the Magician's Podcast, the Uriah Heep Show, and Russell Gilbrook, their current drummer, is big on doing that kind of thing. And it's very careful mixing, because you want to get the feel of it, but it's also just a slight change in volume really makes it override the song. I think the mix on this is fantastic. I do recognize the chorus. I have heard this song before. But yeah, the feel of it, it has a feel almost like Hangman Jury, where everything's just blended together and it just moves so smoothly in the chorus. I'm really digging the song, Corey.
That's a great comparison, because like Hangman Jury, the drums are very much bass and snare, bass mm-hmm. and snare. Like he said, like the cymbals are so far back. All you're hearing is the boom, chick, boom,
yeah.
chick. Yeah. Which is really, really cool.
Almost like Ragdoll, where the kick yes. and snare are just so much in the front. But not overshadowing the song by any means. And Steven's voice sounds really good on this. They have him a little bit further in the front than normal, it seems like, but it works for this song.
Something wrong with the world today. The light bulb's getting dim. There's meltdown in the sky. If you can judge a wise man by the color of his skin, a mystic or a better man than I.
How about that Tom Hamilton?
He's something, isn't he?
I love that little slide bass that he's playing. That really adds an interesting dynamic to the song. Because if he'd have just played like straight eighth notes, boom, 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 it would have been okay. But that bass style is really adding a flavor to this song that makes it so much more interesting than it already is. I really dig the way these guys are when they work together like this. it feels like they're just in the studio smiling across at each other, you know, like we saw them recently in that video. That's what I'm getting the feeling of from this too, that they're just all in it together.
And very rarely does Tom Hamilton just play eighth notes. He's always doing something cool with his bass line.
Yeah, for sure.
Coming up to the second chorus here. I always like that this section kind of took you back, like almost into the ruts, almost into like rocks territory, where you're getting that kind of dirty guitar groove again, and they bring it down. You know, tell me what you think about your situation, complication, aggravation. It's getting to you. The next line, if Chicken Little tells you that the sky is falling, even if it wasn't, would you still come crawling? Like they kind of take you down into the slums a little bit in this section. So you have this big soaring chorus, and then back down into the ruts, very Aerosmith-esque.
Yeah, it almost feels like that down and dirty Southern rock all of a sudden. And, you know, when Aerosmith gets in this zone, it does feel very old school for them. But I really like it. I think it's a great change for the song. It's very unexpected. And they're one of those bands that I feel is not afraid to take some musical chances and make some dramatic changes in their songs, which just makes the songs that much more dynamic and enjoyable, because especially the first time you hear it, like I've heard the song before, but I don't know the song. So this is really more of a first time here for me. And I have to say, I really love the changes. They're very, they're not subtle.
Not at all. And actually, I'm just reading a clip here from the Rolling Stone review of Living on the Edge, where the reviewer says they were, quote, playing it safe according to strict late 80s directives, and the ascending into a soaring Bon Jovi-esque power chorale. Only the gritty guitars on the bridge keep the damn thing grounded, which is kind of where we are now.
Yeah, I feel like even in the verse, and then, you know, with the in the first verse, you know, there was a nice change. They went to a note I wouldn't have expected, and then the chorus kind of does that, and now they're going into a whole different part that I wouldn't have expected. It's not standard songwriting.
Nope, not at all. If you pick up Get a Grip, the album version is 6:07. They cut out that little tail bit of the guitar solo. This is the 6:21 version, which is the full version of Living on the Edge.
That seems like a lot of work for no reason.
I know, right?
Because that little part kind of bridges the gap. You know, it's a warm up for the change. I really love guitar solos like this. I don't need somebody to play fast. I don't need somebody to slam in as many notes as they can. I want something that makes me feel something. And that was a really good emotional solo. It fit the song very, very well.
I'm very much with you. The Yngwie Malmsteens of the world, who are like, hey, look at all the notes I can play. I get quite bored with. But if you're like a Steve Vai, Eddie Van Halen, who can do that and tell me a story, all the better. But I gravitate to guys like Joe Perry, like Jimmy Page, like Billy Gibbons, guys who really just kind of, you know, have that feel and that tone to it. One cool thing about that guitar solo in the video, Joe Perry is playing on a railroad track with a freight train coming towards him. It's the exact same railroad track where they filmed the infamous train scene in the movie Stand By Me.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah, I'm with you. I like a guitarist that, you know, I there's a couple of Yngwie albums I liked. I've covered them on the Haskencast podcast, the first couple that he did. But I think it's more just that I liked the songs. I liked the vocalist. It isn't a matter so much of me liking his guitar style. I think the songs are written well, but I think they're very overplayed. And I remember on pretty much every episode, I'm like, here we go again, you know. In fact, the guys from the Deep Purple podcast were just at a Glenn Hughes Yngwie Malmsteen show. And they right. did a show on that and not very impressed. You know, it's no? He's very much a showman, but I think he just thinks on a level that I think it's kind of like jazz fusion. A lot of people don't understand jazz fusion. They can't grip it musically, so they shy away from it. And I think he is like the jazz fusion musician of rock and roll, where he writes stuff that may be technically amazing. And I remember watching Terry Bozzio videos too when I worked at the music store. He writes some amazing drum parts. He was a drummer for Missing Persons and, you know, did some stuff with Frank Zappa. He can write some amazing stuff, but where do you apply it musically, you know, with other musicians? And I kind of feel like Yngwie's in that category. Like, you can play some amazing stuff, but that doesn't make it enjoyable for a lot of people to listen to.
Do you remember when we played a little bit of the Dream On cover that Ronnie James Dio did with Yngwie Malmsteen playing mm-hmm. guitar on it?
Yeah.
And like, Dream On, very simple melody, right? Da, 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 da. And there's Yngwie. Oh my God.
Well, and it kind of begs the question, like, why would you get a guitarist that won't get the song to play it? I mean, when you're doing a tribute, yeah, you want to inject a little personal flavor, but at the same point, it's a classic song. It's a song that it has to be delivered a certain way within a certain bound of it, you know, and you know he's just going to look at that and go, okay, I'm over here though, you know, and I'd play it the way I play it. So I don't know why you would go for a guy like that for that kind of gig, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with the way he plays. I just am not one that typically enjoys that overplayed style. Corey, tell me if you disagree with this, because you're more familiar with the band's catalog than I am. But it seems like when we have these kind of parts in songs, it seems like Steven typically sings them very straightforward. There's not a lot of variance in pitch when they do these kind of breakdown sections.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think in this section, though, it's kind of a reprise of the earlier bridge, right? He's singing with a lot more urgency, though. Like, this is a song that has some political, social commentary undertones to it. So I was sitting there thinking, like, you really get that coming through. Like, now that we're getting the reprise of the bridge, it's the same bridge, but he's singing it with a little more urgency. Like, the tone, like you said, melody, everything's the same. But, mm-hmm. you know, just urgency-wise, he's throwing a little bit more into it, which I think is kind of cool. So normally I would agree with you. Here, I think he gives us a little bit extra on the second bridge section.
I think at the end of the lines, yeah, it was the first couple, the beginnings of the lines where it just kind of dawned on me where I'm like, yeah, this is kind of a standard type of formula for him. I don't want to say formula because that's really not a good word, but style, I'll say style, I think is a better selection. But yeah, I just happened to think about that. And as I was just quickly going in my head through some of the other songs, I'm like, that is a pretty common performance choice for him. But yeah, I agree, especially in this last repeat. I do feel a better sense of urgency, especially the last half of each line.
There was the bass drum.
Yeah, and beautifully recorded, I might add. And that reverb they have on it, that's not always the easiest to achieve because you have to shave off a little bit of the attack. And the attack is the strike. So when the stick hits the head, that's the attack. Everything after that is decay. And to really get that reverb without it clipping and causing some distortion, you have to shave a little bit of that attack off or use a softer, like more like a bass drum mallet or something with felt on it. But that sounded fantastic. I love that abrupt stop too. I think that was such a dramatic change. Very unexpected, very much to the point of what you were saying, that sense of urgency, that build he was bringing up to that. From the time that we restarted the song, I loved where it went. It went next level sense of urgency right after that. And then just that stop was so powerful. You don't hear them doing that very often.
No, and on that lyric is perfect too. But we can tell them no, or we could let it go, but I would rather be a hanging on. And then there's that hard stop, like you're hanging on for dear life, and you hear the wind, and you're wondering, and you're just kind of waiting, and then the big bass drum kicks in, the boom, boom, boom. We're living on the edge. Like, oh, it's masterfully done. It's probably my favorite part of the song.
Yeah, I would agree. That was fantastic. But I would say there is not a part of this song that has let me down yet. It's been really enjoyable. Is he singing another track behind this going like, yeah, 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 yeah?
He did have that in there. Yeah. Just a little screech. And he has the three. He has Living on the Edge. And then he's singing, You Can't Help Yourself from Falling. You Can't Help Yourself at All. And then, yeah, there's a little bit of just him caterwauling there in the background, too.
You know, I'm normally not a fan of that, but I think that really works for this song. I think that adds, it's just another next level sound to have in there. You could have also done that with a guitar track, just, you know, playing a higher note on top of that. But there's a passion in his voice that I'm hearing that really just gives a bit more of a powerful statement to this song.
I hope you like this section. This goes on for a while. We've already been listening to it for about a minute. We're 4:37 into the song. The song is 6:21. So you're going to hear this refrain quite a bit while the song goes out.
Well, and you said this was released, right? This was a single?
It was, yep.
Was this, did they do an edit for the single? Because usually a single wouldn't be this long.
Yeah, no, I think the only edit on this was the 6:07 version of the song.
Wow, okay. No, I do like it. It is starting to wear a little bit on me because I think they could add some other things and make it a little bit more interesting, which I've noticed they tend to do. They tend to say, hey, here's a really cool part. Let's play this for a little bit. Normally in this spot, like towards the end of the song. But let's see where it goes.
still going. That is Living on the Edge, the full version from the CD Get a Grip. The album version shaves 14 seconds off. I still say you can cut a minute out of the end, and the song is just fine.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know if it's called a build if you're in a descending scale, but they were playing the chords that just kept getting lower and lower. I like the idea of that, but I think that they really could have shaved a good minute, minute and a half off of the song. The other thing that I didn't like was that little bit of scatting that Stephen did at the end, that what it takes, you know, just it didn't really fit the song. I didn't think, you know, I was getting ready to say, you know, we might have a little bit of a battle for the mixtape here, but I don't know how I feel about the last couple minutes of the song. I don't think they were. That could have been done much more efficiently, and it been more enjoyable, I think.
But is it enough to ruin the song for you? That's the question, because Living on the Edge, pretty big hit for the band, pretty iconic song. If it's going on the mixtape, it would be going on side B, the all-time Arrow Top 9, currently populated with Let the Music Do the Talking, Chip Away the Stone, The Other Side, Home Tonight, Crazy, Eat the Rich, Momikin, Shut Up and Dance, and Love Me Two Times. Scott Haskin, I believe it's your turn to go first. You know, the last 60 seconds aside, think about everything else that you heard about this song, and let's have a discussion.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at it from that standpoint, I think it's an absolutely fantastic song. I mean, it had me from the very beginning. I loved the changes in it. I thought there was some really nice dramatic chances that they took that really paid off. But we have to take the song as the whole when we're looking at, should this be on the ultimate selections? I would say I could probably still be convinced when I'm looking at the list of songs and how I feel about them. I think I would probably rate this the same as Crazy. For me, so I might be persuaded on that one, or maybe Shut Up and Dance, but it would be a tough call, but I think it deserves some attention because it's just such a dynamic and interesting song from them. They deserve some praise for the chances they took, but also kind of to be smacked around for the last minute of the song a little bit.
You're not wrong. I agree with all that, but I'm looking at the list and I'm seeing Love Me Two Times on there. We just put it on, three shows ago? Mm-hmm. Doors cover. Really good Doors cover. When I'm thinking about the all-time Aerosmith, like, top nine singles, that's not one of them. Mm-hmm. Whereas Living on the Edge, I can see they're making a case for it. So, even though I could see Living on the Edge not making it to the final version of the mixtape, because of the outro, because of the scatty bullshit that he does at the end there, which I never did like either. Mm-hmm. I would be okay with taking off Love Me Two Times and putting Living on the Edge on.
I hadn't considered that, but I won't disagree because I don't think that Love Me Two Times is going to make it to the end either. I don't know that this one will. But I would say it's a stronger song than Love Me Two Times, even though to Aerosmith's credit, and this is a big thing coming from me, I have not been able to get that song out of my head since we, you know, I'll just be sitting here doing something and I'll be like, dent, 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 you know, and that's a big thing for me because my head changes constantly. Like it's just always thinking of something else. So for that to stick with me is a pretty strong point. But you're right. I think this chorus will stick with me. That dramatic stop with the wind and then the stolen bass drum. I love the sound of that. The production on this is fantastic. And you know, one thing that we haven't talked about a lot is Joey Kramer. And I love one thing, especially about his style, is that he's an incredibly patient drummer. He's very happy to be the backbone and not somebody who's got to do a fill into every chorus and a fill into every, you know, every transition. He's very straightforward, and then he does this one big transitionary fill that he is so good at. You know, we've heard it so many times from him, and it's like three measures longer than a standard fill, but he's so good at that dramatic change And he really deserves some credit in this song too.
100%. Drums are great. They're mixed great. I love Bruce Fairbairn as a producer. Of course, he did Permanent Vacation. He did Pump and he did Get a Grip. And those are like the trifecta of new Aerosmith. That's for sure. They're the three best records, since Toys in the Attic and Rocks. So we're in agreement then. Living on the Edge is replacing Love Me Two Times on the mixtape. And that's really not a knock on Love Me Two Times. I love that cover. I like it better than the Doors version, to be honest with you. I'm not a huge Doors guy, but I do love Aerosmith's version of it. But when I'm thinking all-time Aerosmith top singles, I'm not thinking Love Me Two Times. I'm thinking Living on the Edge. And like you said, it may not find a spot on the final version of the mixtape, but it absolutely deserves a spot right now.
Well, and I think, honestly, anything that we have on the mixtape, anything that we remove it with, has got to be something pretty substantial. So I don't think that anything is a knock on removing any song, because they got on that list for a reason. Yep. You know, but we've got so much ground yet to cover. I don't know how many of these songs that are on there now on either side will still be there, because we've got a long way to go.
Oh, I know. It could be completely different when we get to show 300 and whatever. If we're looking at the mixtape, like, these are all songs from the 200s. We don't have anything from the first 200 episodes on the mixtape anymore.
Yeah, and it's almost because music a lot of times is so much in the moment. You know, here's what this song made me feel right now, whereas I'm not as connected to the way Crazy made me feel when we listened to it, for example, because that was a long time ago. Yeah. And a lot of it is the order that you draw songs in, the mood that you're in when you hear them. There's so many factors that go into it. It's really not a matter of, are these the absolute best songs from Aerosmith? It's the, what was the conclusion of our consensus from the way it played out is really more what it, because you could take 80% of their catalog probably and put it on that tape and be perfectly happy. But it's really just, here's the way it fell and here's the way our choices ended up.
Exactly. I think back to Crazy, that was what, 51 shows ago? We had John Mariano, we had our good friend Jeff Saunders, and a whole pile of whiskey. And we blasted through like three songs that night, and that was one of them. The third song we did that night was I Don't Want to Lick Your Thing, which I don't even remember recording that one. I think I was Three Sheets to the Wind. But that definitely benefited from just being in a good mood with some good friends listening to Crazy. I see it on the list now, and I'm like, oh, that's not going to stay there forever. Crazy has its issues, but I remember listening to it in the moment thinking, this is one of the best songs they ever did.
Right. And I don't just think that was the whiskey or the exhaustion. I think that you're absolutely right. And I wasn't on that show, I don't believe. Yeah. So I listened to all the episodes as they came out, because I was following the show from the beginning. And I do remember it being a very powerful song. I like the song. I think it's a great Aerosmith song. And honestly, it is a great representation of them. Will it stay forever? I don't think so, but who knows?
Who knows? All right. With that, Scott Haskin, let's wrap this one up. By the way, I got to correct myself. Crazy was show 32. It wasn't in the 50s. It was 32. You came on show 40. So that's why you weren't on that episode. So
that's right.
Maybe before I collapse here and fuck up anymore, why don't you tell the fine folks about the Deep Dive Podcasting Network?
I would be happy to do that, Corey, because we've got a lot of great shows, of course, besides this show. You and our old friend John do the show Backtracks Theme Music, covering different songs from films, which I am just enjoying the hell out of. Also, you do a show with our friend Mark Kammeyer, and the podcast Will Rock. And once again, congratulations on 100 episodes. That's absolutely fantastic. I remember, all the different milestones. I just hit 350 on the Haskincast podcast. The Uriah Heep podcast was 398, covering their catalog. And man, every time you hit one of those milestones, you just kind of look back and go, this has been a lot of work, but every moment of it has just been worth it.
Yeah. You know, I cannot agree more. I like 100 episodes to you is like quaint. Like oh yeah, you made it to 100. Good job. Here's your like bronze star. Like,
well, it's funny. Early this morning, there was a live stream of the Deep Purple podcast, and I tried to make those, and it was early enough for me to be able to be on it. And I was joking with the guys, because I actually had wanted to do a Deep Purple podcast myself. But I will only do those kind of shows if I can get the endorsement of the band, so I can, do the show the way I want it to. And I have not been able to get that endorsement from Deep Purple. And they were joking about there being no other show. And I said, well, I tried to take you down, you know, and they said, well, yeah, if you did, they're on episode, they're in their 300s. And they said, you would have already surpassed us if you started the show this week. It's like, it's not that far off, really. But you also do a show with our friend Kevin, the Ultimate Catalog Clash. You guys are currently going through Genesis, not too far from the end, but you're getting there. That's been amazing. Kevin, not to be outdone by the Corey podcast universe, has a couple shows on his own. He's got the Tom Petty podcast or Tom Petty Project and also Seaside Pod Review. I did my show on Uriah Heep, the Magician's podcast. And even though that is pretty much done until they go back in the studio and do another album, that will always be there for people to enjoy. Nate and John, of course, I mentioned at the Deep Purple podcast, The Simple Man at Skynyrd Reconsidered, Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the Other Side, Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast, Paul, Joe, and David at the In the Lap of the Pods podcast, also Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge, Eric and Jonathan at Maiden A to Z, Daniel and Josh at Diary of the Mad Men, the Ultimate Ozzy podcast, who, as we mentioned, may be going back in the studio and seeing what he's got still in the tank. Also, Ben and Sam at Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers podcast, George and Hattie at the Judas Priest cast, Clay and Rye at North by South podcast, Greg and Jonathan at So Far, So Pod, So What, Quinn at And Volume for All Things General Heavy Metal, Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette podcast, Chaz and Greg at Regarding Lulu, and Chaz and Shats at the Rush Rash podcast. Keep an eye out for our own Corey Morissette to be making an appearance on that show. And of course, even you know, outside of the Deep Dive Podcast Network, we have some friends around the world. We've got Sean Geek and Fast Brett. We have Eric at Booked on Rock. We have Ken Knapsack at Pop Rock and Radio. Go to my website, guys. Go to the Aerosmith page at scotthaskin.com. And you can download Ken's app through that link I have there. And of course, the flagship of all Deep Dive podcasts, we have Pod of Thunder. And I'm also going to give an extra shout out to my friends Danielle Harris and Scout Taylor Compton, who do the Talk Scary to Me podcast. We're coming up on Halloween. It's a great show to listen to, and they've given me plenty of shout outs, so I'll give them one here this week.
You know what? I got to check that show out. My daughter, my 11-year-old, is really into horror movies. And we went through all the newer Halloween movies. We watched some Friday 13th. She loves a good slasher flick, all the Scream. She loved those. And I'm thinking she's got to get me more into horror now, too. So I'm like, oh, that podcast sounds like a lot of fun. I should check that out.
Well, right now they're really covering more topics outside of film because, of course, with the strike, they can't, you know, they can't have a lot of film guests on and everything's really limited. I did see from Jamie Lee Curtis today that they have a settlement discussion coming up. So hopefully, especially now that the writer's strike has been settled, the Actors Guild strike will be over as well. But yeah, and I had the pleasure of meeting Danielle and Scout recently. Absolutely wonderful people. The Halloween series, however, the franchise is up for options. So we may very well.
We should put it in a bid.
Yeah, with all my podcasting money.
That's right.
We may be seeing some more Halloween stuff coming to us in the near future.
Yeah, I saw that the leading company for the Halloween franchise is A24. And they do like a lot of smaller independent films like Lady Bird and stuff like that, right? Like they don't do big budget stuff. They usually don't do horror stuff either. So that's really interesting that A24 is leading right now in getting the rights to Halloween. That'd be really cool if they got it.
I would like to see what they would do with it. I wouldn't be surprised though if Full Moon comes in and makes a bid for it because that's really kind of up their alley.
It's a cash cow, I tell you. It doesn't matter how many times they kill Michael Myers, he just keeps coming back.
Exactly, just like Corey Morissette's podcast universe.
Until the entire world implodes on me, which feels like it could be any minute. But before that happens, on behalf of Scott Haskin, my name is Corey Morissette.
Corey.
Oh, Jesus. Yes. Oh, we got a whole bunch of stuff to do. We got a whole bunch of stuff to do. Not forgetting this either. Scott Haskin, how many times has Aerosmith performed Living on the Edge?
I'm going to say this was a big one for them. I would love to hear a live version of this, to be honest. And I'm not big on live versions, but I think this would be a fun one. I think they did this one a lot. I'm going to say 312 times.
You think that's a lot?
Yeah, because they've got so many songs that they have to rotate in and out of their shows. If they didn't have so many in their catalog to play, I would probably pick a higher number. But I'm going to go with that.
All right. Well, the correct number is 923 times.
Holy shit. Wow.
They first played it in 1993, and they last played it September 9th, 2023, one of the few shows on the Peace Out Farewell Tour.
Well, it's a great song to pick for their farewell tour, I have to say, because I obviously we put it on the tape. It's a great representation for them. Now I really want to go see them live because I want to see them do the song.
They're still doing it. And like you said, you wanted to hear a live version. There's a few out there. Rox Donington has it on there. Little South of Sanity double live album has Living on the Edge on there. So you can definitely check out live versions out there. I got to see him perform it live in Minot. It was a great, great performance. So
nice.
923 times.
Wow. That's got to be one of their top. I mean, aside from like Back in the Saddle and Toys in the Attic, that's got to be up there.
Well, let's check it out here. I think I can look up their top songs. Living on the Edge is actually top 10. It's number 10 most performed Aerosmith song. Beating it is, Ragdoll. Beating it by 9 performances. And then you get stuff like Draw the Line. Actually, their number one song, I won't tell you what it is, but their number one song has been played 1,726 times.
I'm going to just make a guess, and don't tell me, we'll save this for something, but I'm going to guess it's Back in the Saddle.
Okay, that is your guess?
That's my guess.
Okay, do you want me to tell you if you're right or wrong?
Okay.
Very wrong.
Very wrong. Is it Toys in the Attic?
Nope. Back in the Saddle is top 20.
Okay.
Toys in the Attic is top 10.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's so many it could be, but I have to go back to like earlier albums because that would have the best chance of being played the most amount of times. But I mean, they've done so many shows. Even if they didn't start playing something until the 90s, it could still be in the thousands.
Oh, easily. Like I'm looking at Stop Messing Around, the show that Joe did as much as he humanly could, is number 16 on their most played list at 762 times.
Which is hopefully where it will end.
It has to. And Bright Light Fright, I think, was 15 times.
Yeah, right. Like where's the sanity in that?
I know, right?
But you also have to think too about the fact that their state of mind wasn't always the clearest when they're picking set lists, and you know it's not like they're looking at the set list and going, you know, these would be good songs, or let's do something different or whatever. I mean, you're tied into, we have to do certain songs, otherwise people will be upset. So we're locked into certain things. Then there's the I want to do this song pick. Then there's the I don't care what you guys want to do, I just want to play. There's so much that goes into those set lists. So it's interesting where it comes out.
All right. Well, Scott, we do have one last piece of business to take care of, and that means you have to replace Living on the Edge on the dice for next week. So
I do.
Your last couple of choices here have been big hits. Are you going to go the big hit route again? Or are you going to go with something a little more obscure? We have a lot of current or like newer Aerosmith on there. We only have one song before 87 on there right now. Or it's two. Sorry, we have two. Back in the Saddle and Think About It. So what do you think? An older, newer? Which way are you leaning?
You know, I think we've had some good luck with the covers, so I'm going to go back to Music from Another Dimension and pick Can't Stop Loving You featuring Carrie Underwood. And I know that that's not a cover, but it has another artist involved. So I think this will be an interesting thing to check out, and we'll see how it goes.
One of the singles from Music from Another Dimension. And around that time, Stephen was leading more country, hence Carrie Underwood. Performing on that one. So I'm looking forward to seeing her performance as part of the Grey Cup this year.
I have to think it was her performance on the Netflix series Cobra Kai at the end of season 4 that pushed her over the edge.
Clearly.
She was nobody before that.
No, nobody at all. But now we have 3 songs from Music from Another Dimension on the dice for next week.
Yeah.
So we got to hit one of them for crying out loud. We got to get rid of that record. Yeah. But until then, on behalf of Scott Haskin, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, let's give the final word to Steven Tyler.